From Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Good morning, Vermont. I think it's Wednesday, April the 8th, 2020. We are working our way through this coronavirus outbreak, crisis, really tough situations for many, many people, including our businesses in Vermont. You've seen a lot of media reporting and experienced, I'm sure, a lot of efforts to reach out to your favorite local whatever it is and found them to be shut down, moved online, operating at a reduced way and at a distance, and it's tough times. And so we're going to be talking in the first half hour this morning with Tim McQuiston. He's editor of Vermont Business Magazine, and finding out a little bit about what he's hearing as he talks to business people around the state. Second half hour, we've got an interesting follow-up to a segment that we did a couple weeks ago, week and a half ago maybe, where we had Whitney Aldrich on. She's a neighbor of WDEV's there on Stowe Street in Waterbury. She has the frame shop, Axel Frame Gallery. And Whitney has been heavily involved in this local effort to put together a team of folks making face guards, masks, mainly for healthcare workers. A lot of them have been shipped to Dr. Richard Burgoyne, who is both works at the urgent care center on Route 100 there in Waterbury Center, and is medical director at the Woodridge Nursing Home in Berlin. And healthcare workers are really, really worried about, are we going to have enough of the personal protective equipment we need to face the work we need to do every day with this COVID-19 pandemic raging. And these folks are helping. And we're going to talk to Dr. Burgoyne about the kind of help that he feels is coming in, and kind of get the other end of that story there. So I think it'll be an interesting conversation in the second half hour. A little later on, after the top of the hour break, we'll be speaking with Tom Levitt. He is president of the Northfield Savings Bank, and circling back to this whole question of how people's finances are holding up in the coronavirus crisis time, and what banks are doing to try to help their customers and borrowers and so on, and what they can do, obviously a lot of things shaking up many, many different parts of the economy, including, you can bet, our banking sector. We'll be finding out some about that from Thomas Levitt in the third half hour of the program, really between 10 and 10:30. And then I believe we're going to open the phone lines toward the end of the show this morning, and hope listeners have some thoughts they'd like to check in with, and just fill us in on what they're seeing and hearing in your own communities out there. It'll be lots of interesting conversations, I'm sure, this morning. Let's get right into it with Tim McQuiston. He's editor of Vermont Business Magazine, as I mentioned, and he is on the telephone with us. Good morning, Tim.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. Yep. Still staying healthy and
by myself in the office on Dorset Street in South Burlington. Huh. The F-35 just took off a little bit ago, and I was kind of concerned about that, but they seem to have gone their way now. And I think a lot of people are probably by themselves as in an office or in a home office or in the guest room plugging away on a laptop or something. But that's the life we all have right now.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. We, I of course am working from home like so many other people are right now, and we're able to do that. We have a little kit called a Comrex that enables me to get a pretty clear signal through the station out to the listeners out there, and take in phone calls like yours right now, and it seems to be working pretty well, and we're glad of that. Normally, this thing goes, I think, to high school basketball games with WDEV's team. In this case, we are no high school basketball games going on, so they said, here, we'll let the talk show host on the 9 to 11 talk show borrow it for a little while. And so that's, you make do. That's what people are trying to do, is just make adjustments and get through the what we're needing to do to keep as much of our work and our lives going as we can in this weird, weird time. But it's difficult, and I wanted to talk with you, Tim, about I called you up yesterday because I was thinking you'd have some good perspective on what's going on in Vermont's business community and how folks are feeling out there, level of confidence about coming back from this and so on. And then we started talking about your business, the Vermont Business Magazine, per se. And, of course, as in many media right now, you were telling me that that incoming revenue is pretty much dried up and things are rough. Is that right?
I think our experience is the same with a lot of companies, a lot of different companies. In fact, you're having Tom Levitt on later in the program, I think is really smart. You know, Northfield Savings Bank is the largest local bank now in the state, which, 30 years ago when you and I were just starting out here, it would have been unbelievable. Northfield Savings Bank, who ever heard of that? There's been a lot of consolidation. There's been a lot of consolidation in media. Now, one of the reasons I'm at the office, Dave, is because my technology at home just isn't good enough. And I think there's a lot of concern in the education system. Is that going to be good enough? But as far as the business is concerned, our account receivables are good, but nothing's coming in. Really, and the account payables are then going to pile up, and I'm sure every business person out there, especially the small business people, are thinking the same thing. And what's going to happen in media? That was another note I made. Already we've seen some layoffs at what we thought were pretty strong media properties, and 7 Days and VT Digger. We're the last of the business publications in Vermont. At one point there were as many as six. And we're it on that. The daily newspapers have really, really taken it on the chin. The Rutland Herald Times Argus has also done some layoffs. What the media is going to look like is going to be very, you're trying to look around the corner. Well, what is going to be the new landscape of business going forward? We've had a tremendous amount of consolidation. As you know, not only the banks, but large businesses like Green Mountain Coffee, right around the corner from where you are, where DEV is in Waterbury, has not only sold, but it's downscaled. Bond Auto Parts, another great Vermont business, has sold out. Champlain Oil, the list goes on and on. So it's been a tremendous amount of consolidation already. And that's what I'd kind of anticipate going forward. But right now, you're saying, what's going on right now? And we've talked to, for instance, we talked to a local banker here about, are any small businesses getting the stimulus money yet? Are any individuals getting the stimulus money yet? And the answer, as far as he knew and anybody that I talked to know, is no. No one's getting any money. The Small Business Direct Grant from the SBA was supposed to go out within 3 days of an application, and now we're hearing 3 days and 3 weeks. To a lot of small businesses, that's three payrolls, Dave. Who has enough cash laying around to get through three payrolls, or even two if you're going biweekly or something like that. So there's there's that money. There's a tremendous amount of money out there, but it the intent of it was to get to the businesses really fast. That's why they opened up the SBA direct loans, that 10,000 and the loans, and then get the pump primed a little bit so we can get back to business, keep people on the payrolls, and then maybe in another month or so get the PPP, the other big loan, that's the Paycheck Protection program that the federal government is rolling out, which has more money in it, but that has been, as you've heard on the national reports, really locked up. And as you can imagine, trying to roll out a program that quickly.
Yeah, that.
So getting the money right now is a big issue right now. And then we look forward to what's going to happen in 3 months or 6 months or 18 months for the economy.
That payroll protection program, I think, is actually one that a lot of Vermont businesses are leaning on, or at least the hope of it, pretty hard to maintain what they've been able to maintain so far. And I know that you know, some have put out the word to their employees that this is the key to our continued ability to make our payroll and to enable folks to keep working. So the economic picture, you know, government to the rescue, basically needs to get here pretty quickly. It's sort of like you hear the sheriff's galloping horse approaching from the horizon, but you haven't actually seen the sheriff on horseback yet to know whether the heroic rescue is going to happen or not for sure, you know. It's very tense for a lot of folks. Talk to me a little bit about you know, we just had the turn of the month, April 1st last week, and I know that in a lot of places around the country, I was reading that rents were not paid to landlords. Are landlords in a fairly forgiving mood, or is this a real, are things already coming to a head, or where are we on that front?
Well, here in Vermont, the governor has been very strong in either asking or requiring credit, and Mayor Weinberger, obviously, in Burlington too, about stopping foreclosures and all that. But people just aren't going to get paid. They're not going to get thrown out. First of all, you know, if you're a landlord, Dave, you would evict someone in the expectation that someone else was going to come in. You know, that you could rent the property. Well, you know, not only is government basically telling you you can't evict people, but there's nobody else to fill that space either, that apartment, you know, that commercial property. So everything's going to be on hold for a while, but it can't hold forever. At some point, the debts have to be paid, the rents have to be paid, the mortgages have to be paid, the accounts payable have to be paid. So it just can't go on forever. And you know, I think Waterbury is a really good microcosm of the state of Vermont. You have a small village area that has been, frankly, thriving in recent times. It has maybe the worst stretch of road in all of Vermont, which is probably saying something, that piece of Route 2 there in front of the state office complex, mm-hmm. which, you know, there was a lot of question about, well, why can't some industries be back out? Construction, road construction, very low spacing of people. It's not a congregating of people. It's pretty necessary to get people going. Outdoor construction, that sort of thing. Lawn mowing. But I think that the governor, and I would agree with him actually, even though the economy is taking a hit on this and these seasonal, you know, jobs like construction are really having a very, very difficult time because they can't make it up. They just can't run a third shift once, you know, things get back up overnight. But he's looking at the health care, obviously, of people and getting that under control. And it does look like it's under control. If you look at hospitalizations and ventilator use, those numbers are still very, very low, and that's why they're encouraged. But, you know, in Waterbury, you have manufacturing. You have, obviously, a very strong tourism economy there. The manufacturing should be okay, but, you know, some of our strong industries like the distilleries and the beer companies, which have been doing very well, is that going to change? You know, what's the ski industry going to look like going forward? Are people going to want to go to a place? You know what a ski lodge is like. Everybody's on top of each other at lunchtime. Yeah. You know, is that an industry that's going to go forward? So what's Waterbury as a thriving now, what's it going to look like in a year or so? I think that'll be a good microcosm of what the rest of the state's economy might look like.
Well, of course, Waterbury bounced back after Tropical Storm Irene back in 2011 and seems to have some pretty significant resilience, and you just sort of say, oh no, you know, not another challenge on this scale where so many local businesses would be in some significant losing ground again. I mean, it would be really, I would think, a tough thing where a lot of folks who look at the life of their business and they think about, you know, I'm going to do this for, I don't know, 20 or 30 years and then retire, 40 years, whatever it is. And you already saw this big dent hit after you had to renovate your storefront or whatever you whatever it is after Tropical Storm Irene, and here we are not quite 10 years later taking in a kind of disaster that no one's ever seen before, and you really don't know. I mean, the thing about a weather event like the tropical storm is or hurricane is that it blows in one day. I remember the day after that was an absolutely gorgeous day, and people were, holy cow, what a mess. We've got a big cleanup to take. But at least you were able to get at it right away, and you knew, you know, so there was this sort of discrete event that everybody understood, now it's over, and let's get digging. In this case, nobody knows when it's over.
And it's also statewide. You talk about the beautiful day after Tropical Storm Irene up here in Burlington. The thought was, why is everybody complaining about this rainstorm? You know, there was very little effect, if any, up here in the Burlington area. But with COVID-19, of course, it's statewide, and you have to be careful. There's no safe harbor right now. You know, there's no other. You know, it's not the economy is tanking statewide and nationally and internationally. Anybody having to use their retirement accounts, their IRAs or 401ks, is getting killed. The stock market, of course, has bounced back a little bit, but some of that is wishful thinking. I think it's fair to say that things are starting to turn the corner a little bit. But Dr. Mark Levine, the health commissioner, is saying we're going to have an echo effect in this illness. You know, people are going to come back out, the economy is going to get going, but the virus isn't going to be totally gone. It's going to be out there. And the healthcare system should be able to take care of that pretty well, but it is going to affect businesses and the economy still for quite some time before we're really on firm footing. Someone was saying 18 months yesterday, an economist, and you know, can we? What businesses are going to be able to survive under these conditions? Even when the federal money starts coming in, which it really is going to start coming in pretty fast.
Yeah, one of the amazing things, I mean, tragic things, but I'm frequently, I find out about some business I wasn't aware of operating in the state of Vermont, and I just say to myself, you know, you think about the ingenuity out there and the sort of creativity. People come up and they find their niches of, you know, a way to make a living, a way to make a contribution, large or small, to their local communities and so on and so forth. And in our last half hour during the morning news service, we have a regular interview with Hadley Wiskoski of the Valley Reporter. And she was talking about a business down in Warren that specializes in growing flowers. And the flowers are typically sold for big events, I gather, like weddings and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, big events aren't happening right now. So this flower farm is in deep trouble as well. And so you can sort of see how you can't imagine, really, right now, I wouldn't think, all of the really negative impacts on just the wide range of Vermont businesses out there.
And the bakeries, I'm sure, are finding that the same thing as well. I mean, we've talked a lot about restaurants and retail. You know, are they going to be able to bounce back once this happens? Or are they, you know, they're so marginal anyway to start with. There are, you know, we talked yesterday in preparing for this, Dave, about you know, what are companies that are actually doing well. And initially, supermarkets were, of course, doing very, very well, and that's sort of backed off now as people are more cautious going out and it's stocked up. There's a couple, Twin Craft up here, which does soap, manufacturer soap, as you can imagine. That's in Winooski, doing very well. Chroma Technology down in Bellows Falls, which does optics, and that's part of some of what they're doing is for the healthcare. In looking at these viruses and trying to come up with a solution. And, of course, the whole healthcare industry, Dave. And I think one thing, once you get back into your political mode, if and when that happens, but it's going to happen at some point, the state of Vermont still has to have a budget, is there going to be a change in the perspective on how we fund hospitals? You know, they've been squeezed by the healthcare regulators trying to reduce costs, and then there's also the issue of elective surgeries and having these private surgery centers which are taking money away from the hospitals. Now we see how vital the hospitals are and how prepared they have to be and how vulnerable they are financially. You know, is that going to change? Is that going to be a big change in government and how, you know, how hospitals are regulated? I think we're going to have a very different perspective on that once the dust settles on this. So, the economy, after 9/11, a lot of people moved to Vermont. Is that going to be the case again to get away from the cities? That was our last big increase in population. Now, you know, all these little things, how's it going to play out? And
In terms of the hospitals, I was just going to interject there for a moment. And in terms of the hospitals, I was talking with Tracy Dolan, Deputy Health Commissioner. She was on the program a week or so ago. And one of the things she said was that we're now going to enter an era when the healthcare system is going to be needing, I mean, assuming that, as a lot of health professionals say and experts in this field say, unfortunately, this will probably not be the last pandemic we see in the coming years. And now, as we look at the healthcare system, one of the things we're going to ask of it as a society, I do believe, is the ability suddenly to, you know, add another 50% to its size or double in size, or as she put it, to flex, you know. And and that is something that I think it wasn't really accounted for in all those Green Mountain Care Board hearings on hospital budgets in the last several years.
I think you're exactly right, and I think the and what the healthcare workers are going through too. We seem to have plenty of supplies here of the PPEs and that sort of thing, but the human toll is quite great. They're working very long hours. They're working really in dangerous situations.
Yeah,
and they keep going because they have to keep going. They're, you know, the analogy of being in a war, well, a soldier just can't walk away from the battlefield, and this is exactly what the healthcare workers are doing. They're staying put. They're, you know, fighting the fight, and I think our appreciation, remember just a year ago going through the nurses' strike up at UVMMC, and I think we're going to have a different perspective on how much we need to pay these people, how many people do we need, and that the whole system is going to be, I think, quite different going forward. And the preparation, as you mentioned, being much more prepared.
Yeah, and I mean, that applies to stockpiles. It applies to staffing issues. Do we have enough people suddenly to handle a big influx of patients, or where are we going to call them in from? You know, I know a lot of hospitals around Vermont in recent times have been using traveling nurses, some even traveling doctors to try to fill gaps in their staffing. And I'm just wondering, I may look into this and see if there's a segment to be done on how is all that going in terms of their ability to keep those folks here in this time of huge need all of a sudden, or are some people starting to say, let's go back to our home states, our home communities, and help out our own family and friends where we came from? That's got to be a tough call for a lot of individual workers out there.
And given their, you know, their perspective on what's going on, they're probably very, very reluctant to do that, to give up on the job. But they're also very expensive, the traveling nurses, and that was a budgetary concern even before that. You know, one is getting enough nurses here to Vermont, and there's been a lot of pressure on payrolls. We can't keep up with, you know, Boston and New York City And even more rural places that have some more money to put into the salaries for nurses especially, but also for doctors, primary care doctors. So that is going to look vastly different, I think, going forward in the landscape. You know, how can we get more people? How can we better prepare?
Well, all sorts of things to sort out. I think I'm going to have you back on the program here to talk about this more. Tim McQuiston from Vermont Business Magazine, I thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's good talking with you.
Thanks, Dave. And we'll hopefully by then they'll have the federal money in the coffers of these local businesses. That's what really needs to happen.
That'll help a lot. Yep. Thanks again, Tim. Alrighty, we are going to go to a bottom of the hour break for some CBS News, a couple words from our sponsors. And when we return, we'll be talking with Dr. Richard Burgoyne and Whitney Aldrich about face masks.
There's comfort in the familiar, but when life presents us with something exciting, we just have to embrace it. With so many of our neighbors producing such wonderful products, we just have to show and tell the world. Come in and see for yourself the old standbys alongside the new. Change is good. The one thing that never changes is our commitment to making your visit a great experience. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV.
We're back continuing into the second half hour of our program this morning here on this Wednesday morning, April the 8th. 2020, and a week ago Friday, I do believe it was, we had a couple people on from Waterbury talking about an effort that kind of sprung up spontaneously in the community. This is such a Vermont thing, you know, people just sort of step up and say, what can I do to be of service? What can I make? What can I provide? What can I bake? What can I cook? What can I bring to whatever problem the community seems to be experiencing? We certainly saw that kind of volunteerism and community spirit back around Tropical Storm Irene, and here we are in the COVID-19 crisis. And one of the people we spoke with a week ago Friday was Whitney Aldrich. She has the Axel Gallery and Frame Shop on Stowe Street in Waterbury, which of course is closed now, unfortunately, but she's gotten involved in this community effort to make face masks. And one of the, I guess, the main recipient, we'll find out exactly all the details here in a moment, but would be the folks at the Woodridge Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Berlin, the nursing home affiliated with the Central Vermont Medical Center, where Dr. Richard Burgoyne is medical director. And of course, Dr. Burgoyne also works at the Urgent Care Center on Route 100 in Waterbury Center. And I believe we have Dr. Burgoyne and Whitney Aldrich with us on the phone this morning. Do we?
I'm here. Yeah. Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Whitney.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining me. And Dr. Burgoyne, tell me a little bit about the degree to which this effort that sprung up in Waterbury has been helpful to getting folks at the staff people at Woodridge some of the personal protective equipment they need.
Well, it's been huge, and it's been helpful in a lot of ways. First and foremost, it shows all the healthcare workers that the community has their back. And I think as we pass these masks out, everybody realizes there's a little bit of love in each one. We do have official medical personal protective equipment, but we don't have much of it. And mm-hmm. Our original plan was to save the homemade stuff for our critical reserve, but it became apparent that we really should save the more effective for when we get our surge of COVID-19 patients and we need slightly improved protection. Everybody, just as a quick summary, everybody knows or have heard the expression N95s, which are about 95% effective, and plain surgical masks are about N90, but these homemade masks are still N75 to 85, so they're not perfect, but they're really good. Yeah, so anyway, we're staffed. We're using these for non-intensive patient contact now throughout the hospital system, not just at Woodridge.
And how many of these masks have you been able to How many of these masks have you been able to pick up from this effort in, based in Waterbury?
Well, Whitney could probably tell me more accurately, but I would guess 300.
And Woodridge, we gave 400, and then we've given 200 to be delivered to the CVMC group.
Wow. So people are really quite busy making these things in Waterbury then, is that right?
Yeah, and, you know, we look at our volunteer list, and I would guess that we have 100, if not a little bit more than 100 people that are engaged to some degree, whether it's cutting material, sewing material, kitting up material, organizing volunteers, working on communications. It's a really incredible effort by our community. I'm really proud to be a part of this community.
And Dr. Burgoyne, I gather this has got to be, I know I've people close to me who work in the CVMC area up there, affiliated with CVMC, and I'm just wondering, in any healthcare complex like that, these have got to be scary times. I mean, you know, you take all, you know, the sort of leveling of anxiety and uncertainty felt by the general populace, and probably multiply it by some factor for folks working in a healthcare environment right now. Can you talk to us a little bit about the current circumstances at Woodridge? Have we seen any positive test results, any cases of the COVID-19 at that facility so far?
Well, we have not in patients at this point, and we had one staff member who tested positive about 2 weeks ago, but she was actually, her schedule was such that she didn't expose anybody. She acquired it from probably a family member, and we've had no subsequent cases in our staff. Everybody's probably heard about what's been going on in Burlington and at the private facility Birchwood. They've got over 20 patients and over 20 staff members, including their medical director, who are all positive for COVID. Things are stressful, but I will say I'm really, like Whitney, I'm really proud of Waterbury, the community, but I'm also proud of the medical community. Everybody's kept their cool. I haven't heard the word burnout used by anybody. You know, we have daily huddles. The administration has done a phenomenal job to keep not only the clinical leaders and administrative leaders informed, but everybody informed so that we're all on the same page. We are expecting a big surge, and so all of our efforts are now focused on how to provide the best services for the population. And again, I'm really proud of the efforts. Sarah Davies is the current medical director at Express Care, and they've come up with an acute respiratory clinic only because we recognize that those patients are the ones that are at high risk. And of course, we all get respiratory infections, and not everything is COVID, but you don't know. It may be COVID.
Yeah.
And so they set up a center at the Berlin office, and the hospital emergency department is ready for the surge. The inpatient team is ready for the surge. We've got isolated wards, and so I feel like we're ready, and I think the community got the memo as well.
Do you have any forecasts for when the surge is expected to hit?
There are lots of different models, but it looks like the end of April is going to be the most likely time for the surge to hit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would gather that looks different. You wear basically two hats in our healthcare community, if I have this right. I know you work at the urgent care center there in Waterbury, and you are a medical director at Woodridge, correct?
Well, that's correct. Since we've been dealing with this pandemic, I have not been going to Express Care. So, you know, the main concern is that somebody on the staff is going to bring this into the building.
Mm-hmm.
We screen our patients, our new admissions, very, very closely, and we isolate them until we have a negative test, or they're quarantined. They still get care and they still get therapy and things like that. But it would have been probably foolhardy for me to work at Express Care and possibly be exposed to it and then bring it into to Woodridge. So I'm just here right now.
Just at Woodridge, you mean?
Yeah.
Yep.
And just with that, along that same line, I'd like to ask all the listeners to please observe the CDC recommendations and the governor's recommendations regarding masking in the community. This isn't really to protect you, it's to protect everybody around you from you. And the problem, of course, is 20% of people who are COVID positive have no symptoms. They're just carriers and they spread it, and two people are standing in the grocery store or the hardware store and they're kind of laughing together, and one person can very easily infect another. And so wearing a mask is an act of respect for your fellow citizens. And I would encourage everybody to gently request people who are working in stores and places to mask up as much as possible, because that's how we're going to flatten the curve out, and that's how we're going to be able to manage this. But if we're cavalier about it, we won't.
Boy, that seems to be good advice right there. I had to run a couple of errands yesterday, and I noted that it was a mix out there. There were some people wearing masks and other people not. You're saying that it sounds like really the masks are not as effective in terms of sort of protecting the individual from others, but it's more a matter of trying to keep oneself from becoming a vector for the disease. Is that right?
Well, it works both ways. The main purpose, and what the CDC and the reason the CDC recommends it, is so we don't share our droplets with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably helps keep us from touching our faces. You know, we all touch our faces almost 30 times an hour and without thinking about it. And if you have a mask on, you're less likely to do that. hand washing is, of course, super important, but the masking is probably as important when we're out in public around other people. I think of it as an act of love. You put a mask on and it's showing the people around you that you respect them and love them.
Yeah, and Whitney, talk about an act of love. These 100-something people in your community who have been involved in this effort to make these masks. You were telling me last time we were speaking together on here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV that you. You have a website and a place where people can go to get good instructions for the best way to recommended method for making these masks. Can you refresh us on where to go on that front?
Sure. This project has been championed by our local nonprofit group called Makersphere.
Mm-hmm.
They're really dedicated to fostering creativity in our community, providing educational opportunities and workspace for people of all ages. And they really saw this project as an opportunity to engage the maker population in our community, people who tinker or are hobbyists, they like to make things. As you know, Vermont is filled with DIYers, so it was an easy ask for our maker community to get involved. So you could find more information about the projects that we're working on, which includes the cloth masks and face shields, at our makersphere.vt.com website. There's a page dedicated to the COVID-19 projects. So you'll be able to find things there if you wanted to get the patterns, see instructional videos. And we're currently in this phase two of our project, we feel, because thanks to the donations that have been made from people from within and outside of our community, we've been able to purchase more fabric, and we will be making more kits that can go out into the community to be sewn up and assembled.
Got it. Okay. Well, that is terrific. Dr. Burgoyne, are you at a point where, or do you imagine yourself getting to a point there at Woodridge where you can say to yourself, Makersphere and Waterbury and all the community folks there pitching in, we've got enough now. Maybe you should turn your attention to other long-term care facilities or other healthcare folks as the recipients for what you're doing. Or do you feel like you're going to be able to absorb the bulk of this largesse for some time to come?
Well, I think we're now fully, we've been giving everybody two masks because they have to be cleaned, they have to be laundered between uses.
Yep.
And so currently we do have every staff member here, but now the overflow is going automatically up the hill to the hospital. So I'm actually right now acting as a conduit. I pick them up from Whitney, and Whitney gets them from her loving cadre of good citizens. I am then delivering them up to the hospital. So it's already funneling up that way. We're not hoarding them here.
No, I wouldn't imagine you'd be hoarding. I just wondered, yeah. You know, sort of, and in fact, I knew you wouldn't be. That's why I asked, because I figured there would probably be a another path here at some point. It's, but then it occurs to me, or you just told me, reminded me that Woodridge is right there, very near the CV. You know, you're basically on the CVMC campus, and that, and of course, the hospital itself has a large need. A large staff of healthcare workers who want to be masked up, and the and are the folks feeling like you know, how are the workers sort of, how do they view these masks? Are they feeling like they're good and they're what they need?
Oh yeah, no, everybody's comfortable with it. We all, you know, you're wearing the mask again for two reasons, and I think everybody here has gotten the memo. This is to protect you, but it's also to protect the patients and your fellow workers from you. And it doesn't bother anybody. I'll say this about the cloth masks. They're a lot more comfortable than the plain surgical masks, and they're a lot more durable. If we were just using surgical masks for each shift, each person would go through probably three or four or five, depending on what they're doing. And when we have a patient who's got on respiratory precautions, we have to, every time you go in and out of the room, you got to use a real surgical mask, and it has to be thrown away. So we go through those very, very quickly, and the cloth masks are now giving us a lot of breathing room, no pun intended, regarding our supply of the surgical masks and the N95s. So that's
well, great. That's good news, and I hope that they are helpful in keeping folks healthy there. And
I think they're invaluable, and I would encourage, if anybody has contacts with any of the other skilled nursing facilities in the area, which is Berlin Health and Rehab, Mayo Healthcare in Northfield, and Berry Gardens in Berry, reach out to them and see if they, you know, those are all either, they're all privately owned, so we don't have direct contact, though we're all communicating regarding this pandemic. But touch base and see if they need them, and if they do, then get them going, because they're going to run out of supplies too.
Doctor, I know you have limited time, but can you hear one listener's call? We just got a call in from someone.
Sure.
You have another minute. I believe it's Wade from Corinth. Good morning, Wade.
Good morning, and good morning, Dr. Burwine. Just a quick question, and I am a little bit involved in this as well, and working on hopefully an enhanced prototype that may work better, just a step better than the cloth mask itself, and would like to talk to you, but of course off the air, not to bore everybody with any details or anything. Is that a possibility? Is there any contact, any way I can reach you?
Yeah, sure. You could reach me through my, I'll tell you what, I'll leave it with,
yeah, please. Yeah.
Mr.
Instead
Mr.
of over the
Graham,
air, if you want to leave it with Dave, maybe you could leave it with Charlotte, or I could call
the office. That'd be fine, sure. That'd be great.
Yeah, let's have you, if you don't mind, Doctor, when we sign off, just stay on with our engineer Dana for a couple minutes, and he'll get your contact info down, and we can make that connection that way. So that'll be great.
I think before we're out of the woods, I think one of the first steps getting back to some kind of normalcy is some of the services and face to face contacts that need to come up, and I think the cloth mask may fall a little short of that, and of course the N95s are going to be, you know, unavailable and overkill for that. So I think there's a need for something in between, and I think we're all on the same track.
I agree with you. And just one quick thing on the N95s, if people have them, they're really not effective unless they're fit properly. So when we use them in a medical center, they have to be fit tested with a special hood, And I've seen a lot of pictures of people using N95s that are too big, and it overlaps on their chin, and it only works if there's a tight seal, and they're very difficult to wear for long periods of time. It feels like somebody's holding a little cup over your face, because it is a little cup over your face.
Correct.
So I agree completely. If we can get something that's reusable and expensive and can be used universally, so you can walk into the florist, you can go into a restaurant, you can go to the hardware store, and the clerk is wearing a comfortable mask, you're wearing a comfortable mask, I think we're going to flatten the curve out and deal with this.
I hope so, and I guess what we're all headed for. And just a reminder to the users, they don't work on your forehead and they don't work around your neck.
Thank you for the call. I've seen that. Well, what happens is people are driving and they lower the mask or something while they're driving, and then they get out of the car and they forget to put it back up again. It seems that's
putting it back up and handling it in that manner is probably one of the worst things you can do if you are in fact the asymptomatic carrier, for sure.
Yep. Yikes! Okay.
Okay,
thanks for the call, Wade.
Great work, and I'll talk to Dr. Burgoyne hopefully later.
Okay.
Alrighty. And Dr. Burgoyne, just before you go, I did want to ask about, there's one kind of mask that I think is probably fairly widely used, only because they were available, as a matter of course, in normal times at the hardware store, and that's this mask that... I had a few of them down in my basement from my last floor sanding project or something, which is just this triangular shaped thing that does go over your nose and your mouth, and it's designed to keep dust away from being breathed in.
Yeah.
Is that of any use?
Hey, anything is better than nothing, and if you can imagine, you're coughing and instead, you cough into your elbow, well, that's better than nothing. But if you had a mask on and you would cough, at least the mask is going to stop your droplets from traveling, regardless of the kind of mask you have on. And so, similarly, it's going to, as your last caller said, as long as you don't handle your mask too much, it'll remain very effective. But anything is better than nothing. So those old ones that you use when you're sanding the floor, I would get on those. All right.
All right. Well, Dr. Burgoyne, I really appreciate you joining me this morning. We're going to go to a brief break on the Dave Graham Show. Whitney, I've got one or two more questions for you, if you could hang in there.
I'm going to run. Yeah. Thanks, Dave, and thank you, Whitney, for all your love and support.
Thanks again, Doctor. And Whitney, I'm just wondering, one question that occurred to me between our last conversation and this one is, are you seeing this spread beyond Waterbury, as in are people from other towns, hearing you on the show here and saying, hey, how do we get going on this?
We are actually. We're hearing from people who live around Waterbury but work or know of facilities that are in Chittenden County. Specifically, we've gotten requests for different facilities to send masks to them directly. And really what Makers Fear is really about empowering people to make things or... kickstart campaigns like this, really empowering people in their community to make things and collaborate together and work together for solutions. So I think what we have come up with as a group is we're actually going to make a little recipe, if you want to call it that, and post it on our MakersFearVT.com site under the COVID-19 projects. We're going to make a little recipe of how you can kickstart the same campaign in your own community. Because
We definitely
see the need, and we can't shoulder the responsibility of garnering all these masks for our entire state. So we definitely
that's true.
Want to empower.
It's a great idea, and it needs to spread. Hey, Whitney, unfortunately, I gotta stop you there because we are about out of time here on this segment of the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV, and I really appreciate all you're doing out there, as well as your willingness to now have joined us twice on our air to tell us about it. And it's an idea that needs to spread. So, folks, all of you out there, listen up and go to that Makersphere VT website, learn how to do it. We're going to go to some CBS News at the top of the hour, and we'll be back in a few minutes, folks.
Lawson's Finest, classic clothing in cutting-edge fashion. Our huge sandwiches and grab-and-go meals, toys, a wide selection of rosé, jewelry, accessories, quarter-pound cookies, and even more beer. Yankee Magazine doesn't call us the best one-stop shopping in Vermont for nothing. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world-famous.
It's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
Thanks for staying with us into our second half hour on this Wednesday morning, April the 8th, 2020. And one of the ramifications of this COVID-19 crisis, actually it really involves many ramifications, but it comes down to people's finances have fallen into significant disarray. An awful lot of jobs have been disappearing over the past month or so. An awful lot of businesses are suddenly not getting any incoming revenue, unable to pay their mortgages and rent and so on at the first of the month, which just passed last week. And it's serious out there in terms of the economic and financial impacts of the COVID-19 crisis. And I've been wanting to get somebody from the banking sector on the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV FM and AM to talk to us a little bit about what it looks like from that realm. And we are very happy to say that we have with us this morning Tom Levitt. He is a president of the Northfield Savings Bank, which is I believe Vermont's largest independent bank these days. And Tom Levitt, I believe, is on the phone. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Dave.
And so talk to me a little bit about, first, what you're seeing in the banking sector out there. This must be quite very worrying time for you folks. And then I also want to get into some of, you know, if you have any advice for people out there who are trying to figure out how to weather these very weird and troubling financial times. How's it feel from the perspective of a bank president right now?
Well, we've got a lot going on, to say the least. When the governor issued the stay-at-home order, part of that was making a determination as to where the critical infrastructure in the state is and who would be designated essential persons for purposes of providing critical health or public safety, lifeline types of services, and those are the true heroes, I should say. But there's also the economic security and the economic lifelines, and banks are right on the front lines there. So all of us in Vermont, with Chris Delia as our leader in terms of the Vermont Bankers Association, providing a lot of national coordination back into Vermont, in terms of some of the guidance, I think we've been pretty unified and doing our best, each and every one of the banks and credit unions in Vermont, to responding to that call.
And the talk to me a little bit about the coordination between local banks here, or regional banks here in Vermont and New England, and the national, the Federal Reserve and national authorities in terms of what you're hearing and what kinds of responses they're expecting from you.
Well, we've gotten pretty good support from the regulators, whether it's the FDIC, making sure that all depositors understand that never has a dime been lost since the inception of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in 1933 in an insured depositor's account. And most depositors are insured up to $250,000 as individuals, and they can be insured for well above that in various ownership combinations. So everyone's money is sound in the FDIC insured world. It's certainly sound here at Northfield Savings Bank and the other banks and credit unions with which I'm quite familiar in Vermont. So that's one. They've got our back, and the Federal Reserve is also stepping up with some liquidity measures to help alleviate some of the burden on community banks that are going to be piling up very quickly in the Paycheck Protection Program as we go to disperse the loans that we've been processing there. So they will be entering into the picture as well. As far as community banks in Vermont, as I said, I think they're holding up well under the circumstances. We did see some behavior in the first week or two of this pandemic where people just felt comfortable having a good amount of cash, well above what they would normally keep on their person or in their homes. I think that is abated. I think we've seen some trending way down from that early concern. And we didn't have anything that really dropped our balances precipitously in any way, shape, or form. So I think a lot of the banks are holding up. They're holding the money. They're protecting it. They're making sure the payments are working. And they're working with their borrowers, consumer, residential mortgage borrowers, and business borrowers on some forms of mitigation.
Now, in terms of the actual day-to-day operations of your bank branches and so on, I'm thinking that lobbies tend to be closed right now, and although people can still do banking at ATMs, which typically are outside the lobbies, and or at drive-through windows. Is that right?
That's right. We were prepared for the pandemic. Most banks are, and I don't mean this pandemic. I mean in general terms. We all have business continuity plans. Northfield Savings Bank had ours. So we have 14 different lanes of action that we are watching daily and that we're tracking and altering as developments pop up. But part of that is branch operations, part of it's call center operations, financial operations, and we go around a long list of things that we're managing. So in the branches, we attempted staggered interval hours in the very early going of the pandemic to see if people could still come into our facilities and with everyone being safe and well. But within about a day or two, it was clear that we were going to go to a stronger lockdown mode across the state. We went to a drive-up only mode. All of our 11 drive-up branches are staffed and operational 8 in the morning until 5:30 at night. Our call centers open from 8 in the morning till 5:30 at night and 9 to noon on Saturday. So drive-up service is available. Strictly by appointment, critical access to safe deposit boxes is available. If people contact us through the call center, get to their branch, and then make those arrangements. Anyone coming in will have to follow a strict screening protocol that assures their safety and our employees' safety, but we are taking care of them. And then you mentioned all the direct channels of banking. We, as our other banks, are blessed to have great technology partners. We've got a robust online and mobile banking platform. We have ATMs. This bank, Northfield Savings Bank, has waived all ATM fees so that if you go to any other ATM around the country and you withdraw funds, that bank is going to charge you for doing that on an NSB account. And NSB typically would charge you a modest fee for that transaction. That modest fee is gone. And we are also refunding the other bank's fees if the person using that ATM lets us know, we will credit their account. So people should feel free to use any ATM. And then there's also all forms of direct deposit, online bill payment. Night drop boxes are still active. And we are learning very quickly to adapt, and our customers have been terrific. They're working with us. They have as many concerns about us as we do about them. And so it's a community process here, and everyone's doing the best they can.
Yeah, talk to me a little bit about sanitation around the ATMs. There's a lot of pushing of buttons and stuff going on there. Are those getting cleaned more regularly now, or how's that work?
Yes, I can only speak for ours. We have ATMs at all of our locations, and we have another couple of branches that have no drive-up that where we have ATM service, and then we also have the ATMs at the Burlington International Airport. So I can only tell you that the ones that are NSB ATMs are getting a thorough protocol in terms of the cleaning of those machines several times a day. And all of our interiors, even though we're not seeing the public coming through unlocked doors at this point, those are being regularly scrubbed with proper PPE and protocols by our staff and by our night crews that are equipped to do an even deeper clean if necessary.
When I think of sort of in normal times, the up close and more personal, and more time in a meeting, things you do with local bankers here. Now I'm thinking of real estate closings. I'm thinking of just the process of going in and getting you know, some counseling about, you know, the best place to put your money in terms of different instruments, CDs or whatever the case may be. You know, I have memories of sitting down with, I'm a Northfield Bank customer myself, and I have memories of sitting down with your staff members and who are always helpful and courteous and professional and all that good stuff. Those kinds of meetings aren't happening right now, right? Pretty much?
Those kinds of meetings are not, but there's a lot of innovation taking place both here and among the customers. We have a secure email portal that can be used, and we're using it right now with our Paycheck Protection Program with our business customers, and they are submitting documents via secure email, so we both feel safe about what they're transmitting. We're able to do all that business behind the curtain, if you will, and not have to deal directly with customers in a physical sense. Where we do have to have signatures, absolutely, or pieces of paper are being exchanged. Some of that's actually happening through the drive-up. Some of our branches, with proper authorization from our HR team and our operations team, are doing some kinds of curbside services with proper protocols observed. So exchanges can be made that way as well. And we are essentially getting by and still conducting business. Our mortgage originators are busy. Our back office folks are busy. Our commercial lending team is extremely busy.
Mortgage originators are busy. I was actually curious about that because I was wondering, you know, what will the impact be of this crisis on – this is typically a time of year when people start to think about – it's pretty quiet in the wintertime in Vermont generally, but the real estate market starts to open up a little bit. People are getting out and looking at houses and that kind of stuff. And then, of course, you know, the end result of that sometimes is a closing. And I'm just wondering what you're seeing and hearing about that whole process.
I've got to look into a little bit more of the purchase and sale side of that question, Dave. That's got to be a little awkward right now, and there are some things going on in terms of virtual home viewings and mm-hmm. Working with brokers. And I think it'd be better, honestly, to have Cindy Lyon or somebody locally from the real estate community on to talk about that. What I can talk about from the banking side is that refinances are quite simplified in terms of being able to do something there. If there is a purchase and sale, a more complicated closing, we're finding ways among attorneys and buyers and sellers to get paperwork moving around. It's a little less fluid, but I have to tell you, even the town offices and the appraisers that are out there, I hope some of you are listening, we thank you so much for finding ways within your work environments to help keep the mortgage applicants in line so that we can get the essential information to underwrite and turn those around. And I will now say, because you might be planning to ask, but while we're on the topic of mortgages, Northfield Savings Bank, like others, are extending a hand to borrowers that may be in stress. And I say may be in stress, knowing that's a much larger percentage today than it would ever be normally. We were riding one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country coming into this pandemic. Now, that may not be the case. So if there is true stress and demonstrated need, we have a consumer credit support group here that is taking those cases one by one, but very efficiently with our existing borrowers and working through that. The same is true of our business borrowers. Again, that are suffering real impacts and stresses as a result of this pandemic. And there's a process for going to our commercial lenders on that. And so we are helping out. One thing I do want to get out there, though, and I think it's very important for everyone that's on the other side of the speakers to listen to this. For those of us in Vermont that have assets, those of us in Vermont that have a steady income right now, and I realize there are many that do not, but for those of us that do, it is so important that we continue to carry out our responsibilities. The payments that we have to make on rent, the payments that we have to make on dues and fees, on mortgages, on business notes and lines of credit, on all of the services that our community is counting on us paying for. If we can do that, we need to do that, because that is our responsibility in this pandemic, to help Vermont's economy not only avoid staggering, but have a much lower bar of recovery when we go back to whatever it is that's going to be normal. So I didn't want to hit that too hard, in that we're not taking all the steps we can to provide legitimate relief, but it's just as important that those of us that can pay do.
Yeah, I think that's that's a really interesting message, and an important message to get out there. It's another sort of curve that we need to flatten here to the extent we can. And obviously, the shake and rattle that the economy is experiencing right now will be less if I can hear what you're saying, Tom Leavitt, president of Northfield Savings Bank, will be less if those who are able to sort of proceed normally, right?
That's correct. Safely and normally, yeah.
Now, I did want to circle back to the payroll protection program. This is a new federal program which is designed, I think, to help businesses, just as its name implies, keep people employed and paid and all that sort of thing. The banking sector clearly has a role here. Talk to us about what is that and how does it work, and if you're a business owner who wants to keep your 10 or 20 or 30 employees on the payroll, how do you go about getting into that?
Sure. Congress passed and the president signed a couple Fridays ago the CARES Act, and this provides $2.2 trillion in relief federally across a spectrum of greatest need. And some of that's aimed at consumers, some of it's aimed at the healthcare sector, some of it's aimed at the town governments and other places that we rely on for our daily requirements. But some of it was also directed to the business community. There's a package aimed at larger business, and that's the U.S. Treasury is going to be involved in making those decisions. But there's also a big chunk. It's $350 billion going in, with Congress now this very day discussing with support from the White House adding on to that package. They're talking upwards of $200 to $250 billion additional dollars for small business relief. The small businesses that we're talking about are like those that you just had on your program, Whitney Aldrich. I mean, these are the everyday businesses that we as Waterbury residents, I'm one of them, depend on just for our quality of life and for our daily activity. So I don't know what she's up to, but I do know that we have a lot of borrowers that have asked about the payment protection program. It's not payment protection, it's paycheck protection program. And sometimes they're used interchangeably. But this is a program where you come to your bank that is an approved SBA authorized lender, and also authorized for the paycheck protection program. You apply on a relatively simple application that is out there on our website and probably on many others. But if you come into our resource center, it's a clickable box on the front page of our website. You will see the first thing is Paycheck Protection Program. And then there's a few steps. You've got to take down the application and fill that out. You have to provide the appropriate documents that are spelled out in the application and on our website. You have to calculate the loan amount, which is calculated by taking the last year's payroll, two different methods. One method is all of 2019 or the last 12 months from time of application. If you have that documented, you average those 12 months, and then you multiply that by 2.5. So you have about a 25% cushion. So let's just say that number is $1 million over a 2 month period for a pretty good sized business. That would be 1,250,000 would be the amount that you'd be eligible to apply for. That amount then is potentially forgiven if you are using it primarily for payroll. Up to 75% you have to have applied to payroll. There are a couple of other categories, mortgage, rent, and utility payments, that do qualify up to 25% of that amount. All that needs to be documented. The payroll portion of this loan can be forgiven. The 8 weeks of payroll going forward from the time of the loan, there will be a back-end process that will need another application. We will be tied to the SBA on that. And then there is a process for the bank, as an agent of the SBA, providing that forgiveness with the bank working with SBA to be made whole on that. So essentially, what the federal government's trying to do, Dave, is give the people that qualify 2 months of payroll to stabilize the workforce, keep people on their paychecks. And there are a number of qualifying criteria for this that we won't have time for today. And I really strongly urge people, particularly businesses of the size I was just talking about, there are many that are smaller. The average size that we're seeing now is probably in about the $160,000 to $170,000 neighborhood. That's average, but there's some that are quite larger than that and some that are much smaller. But you should really talk to an accountant or a tax advisor to make sure you're doing the calculation properly.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like a somewhat involved thing that you don't want to make any mistakes going in or coming out, for that matter, because I'm sure that that could cost you in the long run.
It could really slow things down, because there is a lot of frustration. I don't want to sound like this is all well-oiled. It is not. We had to scramble just to stand our program up in a 72-hour period, and I'm really proud of our team for doing that. We are processing. We have taken several hundred requests. About half of those have been entered into the system on what is called ETRAN at SBA. So we are in business. We are getting authorizations back that are reserving the funds for these borrowers, which they are tremendously grateful for. But all the banks in the country are trying to do this at the same time, including some of the largest, and the SBA system has really been jammed. In defense of the SBA and the U.S. Treasury, they are trying. They are trying to deliver the largest relief and stimulus package in the history of the country in a very short period of time. So we do understand the frustration. But we also understand it's going to take a few days for this thing to kind of find its equilibrium, if it can find its equilibrium.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've heard some of the frustration from listeners who call into the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV, and we were talking. I remember there was one person talking about reaching out to the state Department of Labor and asking about unemployment coverage for people who are self-employed, and wasn't able to get any clear answers. And this question was being posed, of course, before the CARES Act even passed. So, good reason that no clear answers were available, as the legislation wasn't written yet. And I had to say that a lot of this stuff is we're kind of flying it while we're building it, and it's not an easy process for anybody, including the much maligned government bureaucrats out there.
They're really working hard. We just got the interim final rule Thursday night for the critical guidance to begin to go live with the program starting Friday. We held off until Monday because we were building our secure communications channels to make sure they were functioning. We were doing that testing all weekend so that when we opened up at 10 o'clock Monday morning, everything was working well. But we just got last night the loan authorization guidance from the SBA and the promissory note. So that we can actually turn around loan documents and disperse the loans. And now we're being asked to disperse the initial disbursements, as they are being classified, within 5 days of the loan approval by the SBA. So there's a lot of hustle yet ahead of us and all banks to try to make that happen.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hustle already achieved, and I think folks, you know, I hope that listeners are picking up on that, and maybe just getting, at least a twinge of gratitude toward people like you folks at the Northfield Savings Bank and across so many other businesses. I mean, I'm seeing and hearing people stepping up in strange and unforeseen and unprecedented ways within our own little operation at WDEV just to keep us on the air in the face of this. So it's going around. The people are reaching for their better selves and really digging in.
Yeah, and just a few seconds we have, I want to thank everybody in Vermont for hanging in there for each other. We're not going too far these days, and we miss each other physically, and we certainly miss you all that are customers of NSB and all of our fellow citizens around Central Vermont, Chittenden County. But we'll get back together at some point. As I said in my letter to our corporators for annual meeting, we've faced things before. We're going to face this, and we're going to move on.
All right. Well, Tom Levitt of the Northfield Savings Bank, the president there, thank you so much for joining me this morning. Stay healthy. Let's talk again soon.
Dave, thanks so much.
All righty. Back after some CBS News at the bottom of the hour and a couple words from our sponsors. Stay with us, folks.
There's comfort in the familiar, but when life presents us with something exciting, we just have to embrace it. With so many of our neighbors producing such wonderful products, we just have to show and tell the world. Come in and see for yourself the old standbys alongside the new. Change is good. The one thing that never changes is our commitment to making your visit a great experience. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
Now back to the Dave Graham Show on WDEV, FM, and AM.
Yes, indeed. And once again, as my good friend Dana Jewell just mentioned, WDEV will be carrying that news conference with the governor, as we've been doing many days, not every day, but many days here on WDEV. They're tending to happen at 11 o'clock. The governor typically brings in Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine, the heads of other various state agencies who are key to whatever the day's sort of theme is, and we'll be hearing from those folks again shortly after 11 o'clock. WDEV has been carrying these events live on our air, and if you want to catch them just after the conclusion of the Dave Graham Show, you don't have to do anything. Just sit where you are or stand where you are and don't touch the dial, and you'll be transported next to the governor's news conference, which is of course, happening virtually because, the reporters are calling in from where most reporters these days, and your radio host of this Dave Graham Show here in WDE, working from home these days. And so there we go. Let's go to a caller. Michael from Barrytown is joining us. Good morning, Michael.
Oh, good morning, Dave. I want to talk about what recently happened in Wisconsin involving the Supreme Court.
Yes.
The governor, Evers, by executive order, extended the absentee voting period by a week. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned it and said, no way. So the Democrats took it to the federal court system, and a district court judge ordered that the governor's executive order be reinstated and that it was valid. So it was appealed from there up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And yesterday, the court, by a 5-4 decision, overturned the district court and said that it would disrupt voting to extend it by a week. Now, the state is under a lockdown order. I mean, we've all been hearing that the prime way of protecting ourselves and reducing the risk of this virus is social distancing, and yet the Supreme Court, the five justices, the conservative justices, decided that no, social justice, social distancing is not the thing here. They need to be out there voting if they want to vote at all. Now,
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue.
I've been involved in the legal profession for my adult life, and I am beyond disgusted. Ruth Ginsburg, one of the justices of the Supreme Court, wrote a scorching dissent saying that what the majority did was mind-boggling. Now, those are strong words for a Supreme Court justice to issue regarding fellow justices. I the scales for years have been the pictorial representation of what the law is supposed to be about, fair and balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's anything but that. It is a political ideology that seems to be driving this thing, and the health and well-being of people is not of paramount importance. You know, I'm not saying that the Democrats have never cheated in elections, but it seems from everything that I've read, and I read a lot, that the Republicans primarily have been the ones that have instituted various means of suppressing the vote. And by that I mean suppressing the black and Latino vote, which communities normally vote for Democrats. They've cut down significantly the number of voting stations. They've made it very, very difficult for those communities to vote. And here is a perfect example where people wanted to vote. They wanted to vote with the absentee ballot, and they were prevented. They were said, no, if you want to, you got to risk your life and go out there. And on the television, the lines were extremely long. Did you see them?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, it's reprehensible to think of this going on.
I think this, it's a longer story here, and I think when you talk about these long-term efforts at voter suppression, we see it in state after state. We saw it in the Georgia gubernatorial race last fall.
We did, absolutely.
And this will go on as long as it's permitted to, and it'll get worse because what will happen is when Democratic leaning communities are prevented from voting, more Republicans get elected, more Republicans end up in state legislatures and governor's offices and secretary of state's offices, and they come out with more and more draconian laws that if they thought they could get away with reinstituting an absolute bar on people of color voting, they probably would. And
there's a key vacancy on the Wisconsin Supreme Court that people were voting on in addition to the presidential primary. So
I was aware of that as well, and I suspect that I don't know what the result was there. Do you know whether the Democrat or Republican won in that Wisconsin Supreme Court election?
I do not know that.
Yeah, it's kind of a self-perpetuating method here of trying to limit democracy. I think most people understand that in a democracy, the very roots of the words mean people, government by people, and if you're trying to limit that, you're probably trying to limit the numbers of people who are involved. I don't know if you saw President Trump's remarks on this yesterday, but he got some questions at his daily briefing about this issue, and he spoke very, very strongly against, for instance, mail-in ballots, which a lot of people see as a potential solution here. I mean, God forbid, but if this coronavirus crisis lasts in any form toward the election, we're probably, a lot of states are going to be saying, how can we run an election when, traditionally, in normal times, people are lining up quite close to one another in long lines outside of polling places, etc. You saw the pictures from Wisconsin yesterday where people were sort of trying to stand 6 feet at 6 foot intervals.
It's disgusting, Dave.
It's absolutely
reprehensible.
It's a mess. I mean, it really is. not the way this stuff is supposed to go. But as it happens, there is one party which believes that it works very much to its own advantage. And apparently to that party, that is more important than democracy.
And the health and wealth being the life of people. I mean, we're talking about life and death here with this doggone virus.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
What's this doing about the November election? Look, what can we all expect in November? You know, in 2016, we know it was followed up with the Russians and whatever other shenanigans went on. But now, what can we expect in November? Anything remotely fair? I don't know.
Well, I think what we can expect is that it will be as unfair as the people intent on that can make it. And the only real response to that, we're probably not going to solve it in the courts because we see what the courts are. You know, the final arbiter there is the Supreme Court. You know, I told people back in 2016 that a lot of my friends and family members and stuff were not really liking Hillary Clinton for whatever reasons. You know, she obviously had her deficits as a candidate, et cetera. And I would say to them, you know, she might be president for 4 years. You are right now electing the direction of the Supreme Court for the next 40 years.
That was my point too back then, Dave, that was the real plum in that election.
And we just saw it yesterday. Imagine a 5-4 majority going the other way. Could have happened, but it didn't because an awful lot of people wouldn't hold their noses and vote for Hillary Clinton because they still, I don't know, were supporting Bernie Sanders or whatever.
I totally agree with you.
So that's the thing that people have to. We get such into a cult of personality in this country with our presidential candidates, where people decide they like this candidate or they don't like that candidate, and what they really need to be reflecting on is that you're not just electing that candidate, this candidate or that candidate. You are electing Deputy Undersecretary of Education, every Environmental Protection Agency division leader. You are electing every level of the federal judiciary. That's a lot bigger, frankly, than any one individual running for president. And so this is something to be taken seriously. I think that a lot of people feel as though they're disconnected and disinvolved and uninterested in our electoral process here because they focus on, you know, do I like Donald Trump or do I like Hillary Clinton better? I don't really like either of them, therefore I'm not going to vote. And then they discover that suddenly next election they can't vote because there was a Republican sweep and Republicans suppressed their vote.
I can argue quite persuasively that we don't have a true democracy anymore. There are some trappings of a democracy, but we do not have a democracy. When you look at the amount of money it costs to run for these offices, when you look at the voter suppression, you look at the gerrymandering that the Supreme Court filed up on too royally. I would argue we don't have a democracy. If we want one, we have to strive to get there, but we're sure not there now.
Got to fight to get it back. Michael, I got to go, but thank you for the call. You're raising some good points here. Let's go to Fred in Newbury. Good morning, Fred.
Yeah, we have a representative republic. We don't have a democracy. Of course we don't have a democracy. Hey, my question is, which branch of government is the most powerful?
Which branch of government? Probably the executive.
Yeah, you're right. I agree. The executive is most powerful. So we don't have three equal branches of government. We can't have three equal branches of government because we'd never get anything done. Right now, if you look at it, the Congress of the United States can declare war. Only the Congress of the United States can declare war. How many declare wars did we have? I think we've had four, if I'm right.
Yep. Well, of course, a lot of the wars that were declared other than by Congress were pretty questionable in their execution, the whole thing. I'm not so sure that keeping it to four wars over the course of the last 200 years would necessarily have been a bad idea. Do you think so?
Well, yeah.
I mean, was the Gulf War a good idea, Fred?
Yeah.
Or, you know,
here's the deal. The Vietnam War, I was a part of the Vietnam War in an indirect way. In the Vietnam War was a war. It was a.
Fred, get near a window or something. Your phone signal stinks. Come on.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
That's much better.
Okay, so it was the Vietnam War wasn't a war.
It's a little better.
wasn't a war of survival. It was a political war. We didn't want the dominoes to fall.
I'm not so sure that all that loss of life really is what kept the number of dominoes falling to the number that eventually fell. And I don't know that Vietnam had anything to do with Cuba or Nicaragua.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we got to let you go, Fred. Your connection stinks. You got to improve your cell phone somehow. Well, I just wanted to continue that, even though we don't have Fred on the line with us anymore, I wanted to respond to his and I hear this a lot from a certain side of the political political spectrum, that, hey, we don't live in a democracy, we live in a republic, and therefore, I guess the logic is that we shouldn't worry about people not being allowed to vote. Well, I think that when I talk about the issue of democracy being defended, democracy merely is a tendency. It's not an actual structure of government. And democracy, to me, is the tendency to allow the maximum participation you can manage to allow in our electoral processes. I understand, and it's very obvious, and I don't need people call us up and explain this to us, because I think everyone else understands as well that we live we have a representative system of government here. We send people to Congress, we send people to the U.S. Senate, state legislatures, etc. But when I talk about democracy being impeded by all of these voter suppression efforts, and by, for instance, this idea that in Wisconsin, the U.S. Supreme Court says you are supposed to go out and vote, you can't use mail-in voting, even though you, by going out and voting, you might catch a fatal disease. There's a little disincentive there, but obviously the idea is that if people can be scared to go out and vote, and then they don't, and a certain political party therefore gets elected, and we end up with not a 5-4 majority on the Supreme Court, but a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. That's the goal, folks. That's how it works. It just is. It's a self-perpetuating, self-aggrandizing, and self-increasing system designed to make sure that an awful lot of folks who live in this country aren't really represented in government. And the sooner people understand that and make sure that our voting participation goes from about half the eligible voters coming to the polls to about 95% of the eligible voters coming to the polls, the sooner we may have a crack at solving problems like that. But so anyway, 244-1777 is the call-in number at our studio in Waterbury, 1-877-291-8255 or 291-TALK if you would like to check into the Dave Graham Show here and express your opinions. You know, tell me I'm not totally crazy about the idea that anybody who is of legal age and who is legally eligible to vote in the United States should be allowed to vote. The president yesterday was fantasizing about thousands of people sitting around living rooms. Those are his words, filling out mail-in ballots. I don't know who's got a living room that would fit 1,000 people. Maybe he does, but I couldn't cram 1,000 people into my entire house, never mind just my living room. So I don't know how that works, but that is what the President of the United States said yesterday. And that's the quality of rhetoric we get out of that president very, very often. We welcome. We have only about 5 or 6 minutes here to go on the Dave Graham Show here today, but so we do have time for a couple more calls from listeners out there. And one of the situations here with the COVID-19 epidemic, or pandemic, I should say, is that the Washington Post is saying that even as deaths mount, officials see signs the pandemic's toll may not match the worst fears, and that's an interesting question. Is sort of what is the level of expectation? You know, in political primaries, people always, and political elections in general, people always talk about the expectations game. Will this candidate get 30% of the vote or 40% of the vote? And if the candidate gets only 25% of the vote, oh boy, what a bad day for that candidate. And some of that's human nature. Some of that's kind of gaming the system. Some of that is trying to set up beforehand for to play with people's expectations and stuff, and work all of that to advantage. We have had estimates in the last 6 weeks or so from our president that 15 people would have coronavirus, and that eventually the number would just head down toward zero. And then we've had other estimates from the same person who has told us that as many as 200,000 people could die in the coronavirus pandemic. I don't know sort of what kind of organized thinking leads anybody to utter both things publicly within a few weeks of each other. I'm not understanding that. If anybody has a good explanation for for some of that, welcome to call the Dave Graham Show and fill us in on what is happening. But you know, I guess it has to be regarded as a somewhat positive story if the Washington Post is now out reporting that experts are saying this may not be as bad as some of the worst fears had imagined. Here's the way their story begins. U.S. authorities on Tuesday reported 30,700 more people infected with the novel coronavirus and over 1,800 more deaths, the highest daily death toll so far. But amid the grim data, some officials said they saw grounds for hope that the pandemic's devastation would at least not be as bad as the direst projections. The New York, the state hardest hit by the virus, reported its highest daily death toll to date. 731 souls lost their lives as a result of this disease. But Democratic Governor Andrew M. Cuomo said the number of new patients admitted to hospitals appeared to be trending downward. Let's hope that trend continues. And maybe we can say that the thing has hit its peak, and we can start to, I don't know if we're quite ready to breathe a sigh of relief or what, but at least imagine a post-coronavirus world, and let us get there soon, folks. Right now, we're projecting that we are reaching a plateau in the total number of hospitalizations, and you can see the growth, and you can see it starting to flatten, Cuomo told reporters on Tuesday. Change in daily ICU admissions is way down, and that's good news. The daily intubations number is down, and that's good news. The discharge rate is right about where it was. So, yeah, let's take that as a glimmer of hope, folks, and let's end the today's program of the Dave Graham Show here on WDEV FM and AM with that, because we are about at the top of the hour. Thanks so much for listening this morning. I want to thank all of my guests today, Tim McQuiston, Dr. Richard Burgoyne, Whitney Aldrich, Tom Levitt from the Northfield Savings Bank, and all you listeners calling in. It's always good. Hey, let's do this again tomorrow, shall we? Stay healthy, everybody. Have a good afternoon.